And welcome back to the podcast. I'm Jamie Baines. For this episode, we're flipping the script a bit, as the cool kids say. My dear friend, Dr. Richard Groover, texted me with an idea. He said he thought that my listeners might enjoy hearing about me, so he suggested that he interview me. And I thought, why not? I'm all about positivity, so I agreed to do it. Actually, I don't much like talking about myself, and I specifically tailor my podcast to be about my guests, not me. But I thought that it might be fun to turn the tables and put myself in the hot seat. So here it is. I hope you enjoyed this flip-flopped episode. And welcome back to the podcast. Today's guest is one of my favorite people in the world, Dr. Richard Groover. How are you, Richard?
I'm fine, but I might be a guest, but the interviewee is going to be Jamie Baines.
That's right. We're gonna kind of flip the script a little bit, and I'm actually going to turn this over to Richard. So, Richard, it's all you.
Well, first, I want to thank you for agreeing to do this, because I think many of your listeners, some know you, some maybe don't know you as well, might enjoy hearing some things about you, things I know and things I don't know. So we're going to proceed accordingly.
I am ready. I think it's a great idea. And I don't, and just so everybody knows, we have not rehearsed this. I have no idea what you're going to ask me. It's totally unscripted, like everything we do. So I'm all yours.
Okay. Well, let's begin by telling us where you were born.
I was born at St. Mary's Hospital in Henrico County.
And that's, of course, in Richmond, Virginia, because, you know, some of these podcasts are picked up by people in other countries.
That's right.
So if any of the Russians are out there and want to know about it, it's in the United States and in Virginia.
It is. You're right.
And you don't have to give your age, but people can figure that out unless you want to provide it.
I am 54 years old.
All right. Well, you haven't hit the golden 55 yet.
It's almost, I'm almost there. Almost, not quite.
Yeah. Please summarize for the listeners your education.
Sure. I went to Richmond Public Schools. I started out at Ginner Park Elementary School, and then Thomas Henderson, and then John Marshall / Henderson Alternative High School, and from there to VCU with a psychology major.
Oh, you were a psych major.
I was.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, that's that can be a challenge right there, I'm sure.
I enjoyed it a lot, though. I enjoy the human mind.
Well, and I think that might help you in your future, in your career and such. So I'd like to jump into that if we could. How did you get into law enforcement?
I actually, growing up watching, I watched a lot of cop shows on TV. I watched Adam 12, which was actually in reruns when I was watching it. The ones that really formed me, I guess, were Chips and T.J. Hooker. And I thought being a cop was probably one of the coolest things you could ever be.
Well, that sometimes is true. And I know you have stories that it's sometimes not true. I guess you kind of said you watched the shows, but as you were finishing college, and you, I guess, decided to join the Richmond Police Department. Talk about that a little bit.
I did. I had actually, when I went to join, in 1991, and that was 4 years after getting out of high school, and Richmond had a hiring freeze going on. So I applied in 1991 and got hired in 1993, started the academy in February of 1993.
Oh, the academy. How was that?
Hated it. I would never do another one ever again in my life. I enjoyed all the people that I went through with. I enjoyed the instructors after I was done with it. But there is no way I'd ever, ever do an academy again. And my hat's off to people who do multiple academies in their career.
Well, how long were you in the academy before they turned you loose?
Yeah, I think it was that time. It was either 33 or 37 weeks, I believe. And it might have been there was a 4 week or 5 week time period in there for field training where you go out with another officer and ride along for about a month and a half.
I see. And then they eventually turned you loose?
Yep, in Church Hill.
Oh, you had a challenge. Please, for those people not from Richmond, please describe a little bit what Church Hill is like.
I enjoy Church Hill. Church Hill is a small area. It's the eastern part of the city. It has got, at least when I was there, just the majority of the housing communities, being Creighton Court, Wickham Court, Gilpin Court, Mosby Court, Fairfield Court, and the like. And it also had, during that time, Broad Street kind of ran through it. South of Broad was the restored area. A lot of the older houses were had been restored, obviously, because of the name. Were very high-priced houses. The other side of Broad Street, the north side of Broad, that was more run down. Since then, the entire area up there has gotten restored.
Well, yeah, but the particular area north of Broad Street, in my knowledge, which is limited, is a much higher crime area than anywhere else in the city of Richmond. Was that correct at that time?
It was. It was the that was the time, that was when I was in patrol in the early through the mid-90s, it was the crime rate was at its high with the murder rate, shootings, robberies. There was a whole lot going on in Richmond itself, and especially up in Church Hill.
That's what I did kind of recall. So anyway, you survived that. And then eventually you kind of left patrol and eventually became a detective. Describe a little bit how that happened.
I did. I've been, I always enjoyed patrol work. I worked all multiple shifts. I was, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be a patrol officer for the rest of my life. 9 years in, an opening came up in youth services in the Richmond Police Department, Detective Division, Major Crimes. And I said, you know what, I'm going to put in for it. And I told my sergeant at the time that I was interested, and he made a few calls. And probably within a month, I'd been transferred to youth services up in, again, with the police department, and which mainly dealt with, believe it or not, a lot of child sex crimes. It sounds like it's a very innocuous kind of thing when you say youth services, but the majority of the cases that we investigate, and they still investigate, are crimes against kids, and a lot of times crimes that kids do.
Yeah, and of course, if they're under a certain age, they're handled differently, aren't they?
They are. There's a certain, excuse me, with each of the sex offenses, there's also a continuum of, you know, you charge this if they're 15 and above, 15 and below, assaults. Everything is kind of, you know, contingent upon the children's age. And sometimes that's kind of antiquated because a lot of kids, their age doesn't necessarily mean that they're on that same level as far as maybe viciousness. Or on the flip side of that, you know, it could mean that they're better. So it was a lot of getting used to it, and that is about the most busiest section of the Richmond Police Department there is, because they have so few detectives there, and their caseload is just incredible.
Yeah. Well, now also we seem to have more occurrences of, I'll call them children, that are under, let's say, 16 years old, committing crime. Is that still pretty much, do you think, still a problem, or was then?
I think it is still a problem. I remember, again, this is kind of harkening back to the patrol days, we had up on Church Hill a huge problem with stolen cars. Back then, it would be like GM products, and they'd pop the steering column to get into it. We would have as many as 6 or 7 stolen cars a night rolling around Church Hill. And for the most part, the people stealing the cars were juveniles.
And were so, they just joyriding?
They were.
Or
they
did
were.
They turn them over to somebody?
No. There was none of that we saw. It was mainly just joyriding. And then we'd pursue them. And, you know, back then, you can remember back in those days too, you could pursue a little more. It was a little more, probably a little more reckless about driving around chasing cars all around the city. And then, you know, it got to the point, Richard, where a lot of times we just tell these kids, once we arrest them, say, look, just pull the car over and leave it. so you don't get hurt and you don't wreck anything out. Nothing's going to happen to you anyway in court, which generally was the case with the juvenile charges.
Well, that was an excellent strategy to avoid problems with chases and something else that might be more problematic.
That unfortunately, it never worked, but we would always suggest that to them.
Yeah, well, I'm sure for some of them, some kids are really smart and some are not. And so I guess that works sometimes, mm-hmm. for sure. So eventually you transitioned, and when I first met you, you were a homicide detective. How did that transition occur?
Correct. I did youth services for 2 years, and I was in the same spot before. I was like, you know what? I'm in youth services. I love what I'm doing. I love I love arresting people who hurt kids. Never going anywhere. This is where I'll be through the rest of my career. So when you work as a detective, you fill out what's called like an incident report incident report. Excuse me, summary some kind. I can't remember what Richmond called it. But anyway, so it's basically a narrative of the crime that you investigated.
Yeah.
And I can remember probably a couple of years there, one of the captains or sergeants from homicide said, you write really good report, better report than a lot of people in homicide write. We'd like to have you come up to homicide. I was like, no, thanks. Again, I still like what I'm doing. So they asked me one more time after that. I said, nope, no, thanks. I enjoy what I'm doing. Finally, Jeff Goodson, who became my sergeant, said, look, man, he said, I'm going to ask you again. This might be the last time you get asked to switch to homicide. And at that point, I was like, okay, you know what? He's right. He has a very good point. I do enjoy what I'm doing, but I think you have to kind of broaden your horizons and try something new. And again, they're not going to keep asking you. They're going to ask somebody else eventually. So I said yes, and I got transferred to the homicide unit.
Well, I think a lot of the listeners may not realize that when you advance to do detective work, maybe you stop wearing a uniform that most of the patrol officers wore, and you're wearing more street clothes. And I've noticed many times the Richmond officers are wearing a tie and they look pretty dressed up. That had to be a little bit of a change for you.
It was. You get used to wearing a bulletproof vest and a uniform and your duty belt, excuse me, and your boots and everything. And then you switch over to wearing a shirt, shirt and tie, and just a regular belt with, you hang all your gear up on that and you wear pointy toe shoes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm sure that your clothing expense probably increased, and I guess that's true. And also, am I correct that detectives don't get paid any more money?
they don't. I think from time to time there will be they'll give you a little extra, maybe like a stipend almost, a differential.
Yeah.
That's what they call it, a differential. But it's not, being a detective is not a promotion, at least in the Richmond Police Department. It is a lateral transfer, meaning just because you're a detective one day does not mean that you can't be a patrol officer the next day. If they need you there, or you mess up, or depending on what the department's needs are. And I'm sure they do it that way for that reason. I know a lot of other departments, being promoted to detective is actually a promotion, and you can't be easily put back into patrol.
Yeah. Well, and also you might have to work more than an 8-hour period of time. You keep going and going and going, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. Especially with both youth services and with homicides as well, there is no 8-hour days. They give you a phone. They expect you to answer it at all times. when I got to homicide, that was a whole different ball game, as far as you always have to be available for prosecutors to call you. You have to be available for your sergeant to call you. And most importantly, you have to be available for the victim's family to call you and keep them abreast of what's going on. So you always have to have your phone on, and you're never off.
And I think a lot of people don't realize the one-to-one that detectives do with families of victims, which could be pretty tough.
Yeah, I've had more than on one occasion the family of a victim will say that I'm their detective. And that's a lot of ways the family looks at a police detective, is that you are their detective. You're there for them, and they depend on you for so much.
Well, one thing that I experienced just a little bit, but I know much more that you would have, would be the viewing of deceased people. And I mean, I've seen a lot of dead people, but it was usually traffic. But when you're dealing with a homicide, that's a whole different cup of tea. And how do you deal with seeing dead people that are victims of homicide? Did it bother you? How did you place that in your brain?
You know, it really did not, and I'm not sure why it didn't. In fact, from time to time, if I have a hard time going to sleep, if I envision one of the crime scenes I went to, I'll fall asleep and just like a baby. So I don't know why. You know, it's always tough seeing dead children. That's always going to be a tough one. But who knows? Maybe it's down deep in my psyche waiting to pop. But so far, I haven't had a hard time dealing with death.
Well, I do think you have the ability to compartmentalize that and put it in a place that's not going to bother you. I know that some police, even when they're involved in a shooting, or if they've been maybe over in a war zone outside of the United States, they have a hard time with PTSD. But I'm glad to hear that you don't have that problem, and maybe that's the perfect kind of homicide detective.
Maybe so. Maybe so. And, you know, you never know what the toll is going to be later on as you get older. You know, you're kind of brick by brick, but you just kind of take stuff day by day as well.
So you have a lot of experience in patrol as well as a detective. Why did you not decide to go on to advance to the sergeant level?
You know, back in patrol, I took the sergeant's test and failed it miserably. And I was like, you know what? Maybe it wasn't for me. So I did that, and again, went to the detective divisions that I went to, and then I was acting sergeant in homicide on two separate occasions, and I enjoyed that as well. But what I really enjoy is getting down to it. And talking to the families and figuring stuff out and just doing the day-to-day and learning stuff, especially. You know, a lot of my contemporaries now are chiefs or majors, all up and down, and that's their jam. That's fine. I still enjoy doing an investigative side of it.
Well, and I do think that there's a great value in having somebody at your skill level. And, of course, when you have to move up into sergeant and dealing with administrivia, supervisor once called it to me, it's not always as pleasant as doing the work that the man on the street or the detective does. So
you're right. And, you know, I was a homicide detective for 16 years. And when I changed departments, I was a patrol officer again for about a year and a half. And then I became an investigator, which is what I am now. But the investigation side I'm in now is more of a general investigation. So it's a whole plethora of things to be investigated. And when you just focus on homicides, that's a very narrow field of investigation. There are a few things that branch off, but you can get into it. And until you start investigating other things and other crimes, you really realize how much you have to learn when you do it. And so I've really enjoyed learning more about different avenues of investigation.
Well, do you want to tell the listeners what department you're now with?
Yeah, I work for the Hanover County Sheriff's Office. And I'll post your alma mater. And what I'll post numerous times is that you're a lucky person when you can say you loved where you used to work and you love where you work. And yeah. I have immensely enjoyed both departments.
Well, definitely Hanover is different. And of course, I track the news occurring in our county, and you don't have the frequency of homicides that you have in Richmond. But there's, you know, it comes up, and I think Hanover's lucky to have a guy with your experience doing some of those types of investigations.
Well, and I appreciate that, and people say that a lot as well. And I'll kind of go back to what I just said is like the crew that I'm working with now, the investigators in Hanover County, they have really been a blessing to me for learning so much and to expand my knowledge. I mean, a lot of people say that, oh, they're lucky to have you. Well, I'm lucky to have them because, again, they have given me so much more, again, so many more avenues to explore and to learn. And, you know, at our age, Richard, a lot of times people don't get that. You get set in your ways. A lot of guys will get into homicide like I was and stay there for, you know, 20, 25 years, and that's all that they do, and then they retire, and which is what I did.
Why did you decide to retire and leave Richmond?
Well, I left Richmond right in the midst of 2020. I left. Everything was going on. I was getting really discouraged at the way that a lot of the citizens of Richmond were treating the police department. And I had been in the drop, which is basically a retirement program, for about 2.5 years. My plan was always to go to Hanover County after I retired from Richmond.
Oh, good to know.
Yeah, and so I felt it was that time. A couple police officers had gotten arrested. More importantly, a couple police officers had gotten shot. And it was just kind of a bad scene going on in the city at that time. And so I decided to pull the plug and make the transfer over. And that being said, you know, there is so much crossover between all of the counties and the city. The agencies working together because, you know this, that, you know, crime doesn't necessarily look at jurisdictions or city-county borders. It crosses over.
Right. Well, and I do think, though, that, and one other thing that I've noticed, of course, when you work for a police department, you have certain protections within being an employee. But in a sheriff's department, you serve at the pleasure of the sheriff.
You do.
And I've, as I've kiddingly said, I always got along great with our sheriffs. But if they don't like something minor about you, the smell of your breath or whatever it is, you're gone.
Right.
And you can be terminated instantly.
You can.
So that's a bit of a challenge, but it's also a good situation for, I think, the citizens and how things can be improved. So want to shift topics.
Sure.
So I'll talk about you writing the crime novels. How many have you now written?
I've probably written 12. I've published 7.
Okay.
And when I get on a writing spree, I just write. And for a while I was like releasing 2 a year, and then that was a little much. So I dropped it back down to 1. I have actually started two different new series. One I'm getting ready to complete, or the book the newest novel I'm getting ready to finish. Excuse me, and sorry, the main series is Danny Park novel series.
Right.
And then there's the Outlaw series, which is a group of vigilante women fighting crime. And
yeah.
The newest one is Nathan, which is a brother who is a guy who is a homicide detective, and he sees the ghost of his dead brother as he goes through life.
Yeah. Well, these are exciting, and for all the listeners out there, you need to buy his books.
Thank you. They are great.
They are great to read, lots of fun, and anyway, you need to do that. Now, did you find that when you started writing the novels that it was a kind of therapy for you, or what was the impetus for doing that?
Excuse me, that's a good question. It was. I've told people that as well. It all kind of piggybacked off 2020 and a lot of the negativity that was thrown out at police officers and, you know, being painted with a broad brush, which I think was wrong. And so I decided that I wasn't going to have police corruption or anything like that in my novels. In my novels, the police are absolutely the good guys.
Yeah.
And so that's how I decided to write them. You know, I'm well aware that there's always a bad apple out there, but not in my novels.
Well, that's true, and any reader will see that. So I got to ask you about Danny and Park. Was one of them you at some point in your career?
Both of them are me. So it's like it's a dichotomy for sure. And there are definitely some scenes in all the books that I've experienced on both sides, be it patrol or as a detective. And there's also a lot of fictionalized as well. But it's fun. Now, it's fun writing, and it is definitely cathartic to write and to be able to say what I want to say.
Well, I think many of your readers would love to see Danny and Park turned into a movie.
I would like to see that as well, because I'd like to see it done well.
Right. Well, so at some point in your life, maybe you can get an agent that will pitch this thing properly to Hollywood, and that would be the method of doing it.
Right.
People like cop movies, and they do like cop stories, and they like cop characters. And so this is all a win-win situation. So out there, somebody listening to the podcast, consider this, do it, make it happen.
I agree. I concur. I see a lot of the scenes that I write in my mind as a movie. So yes, I'd be good with that.
So when you're writing a scene in the book, so you're taking an idea of what's going to happen with a bad guy or whatever, and you're capturing the scene and writing down all those details. People don't realize that's a lot of work to pull out together on the written word page.
It is. And, you know, I talked to one of the authors that I've spoken with before. She said that she flies by the seat of her pants, Tracy Clark. And I do the same kind of thing. I don't necessarily outline what I'm going to write. A lot of times I have to make myself write for a half hour a day. I think I read that somewhere that, you know, a lot of authors say just sit there and write, and it's absolutely true. Because if you don't write, you lose your ideas, or you get a whole bunch of ideas gathered up in your head, and you don't put any of them down on paper.
Have you ever woken up at night and suddenly scribbled something down and then went back to sleep?
I have not, but I will. I get up early to run, and an idea will pop into my head, and I'll make sure I try to expand my brain so I remember it.
Let's talk about another one of your fun activities. Some of the listeners may not know that you enjoy a motorcycle.
Absolutely.
Tell us about the motorcycle.
I started riding actually when I was 35 years old. So I had to wait till my mom died because she wouldn't want me on a motorcycle.
Good for mom.
Good for mom. I wouldn't want my sons on a motorcycle either. But I enjoyed it. You know, you hear about throttle therapy, and in my opinion, it is absolutely real. It's just kind of getting on there and let the feel the wind going by and just watching stuff. And I truly enjoy it.
Tell them what kind of motorcycle you have.
Goldwing. That was my always wanted to be my retirement bike, and so that's what I have. It's a 2002 Goldwing with 50 some odd thousand miles on it.
Goldwing is who makes that?
Honda.
Okay, sorry.
It's a big Honda Goldwing. They say it looks like half a car, and I love it.
I've seen it, and it's a nice one. God knows, I worry for everybody.
I know you do.
I own two motorcycles, and thank God got rid of them because a lot of dead people on motorcycles. And also trying to chase one. Have you ever tried to chase one?
No. That's kind of a city.
Well, out in Hanover, I chased one time for a number of miles, and I couldn't catch him.
No, that's not even worth chasing after him.
There's another really wonderful quality about you that I have observed, And you have two sons, and they're quite different from each other, and you treat them so equally. What's the secret for doing that?
I think it's just love. You know, that you don't want your kids to compete with one another necessarily. You want them to both be individuals and just kind of be who they want to be. And they're already going to compare themselves, I think, to each other anyway. So, you know, I think just any child, whether son, daughter, just give them love and let them know that you love them. I tell my sons I love them every day, and they'll say, "Oh, I love you too, Dad." But I think it's really important for your children to hear that.
And for the listeners, Jamie has a beautiful wife. I've met her. She's a nice person, but she's definitely taken.
Right. For sure. For sure.
How many years have you been married?
22.
Yeah, you got to keep that right.
I know. I got it on my phone. I do. And she's great with the boys.
You.
Yeah, exactly. And she's great with the boys as well. She said that when she was growing up, excuse me, she figured she always wanted girls. And then I told her I'm a man maker. And now that she has boys, she said she couldn't imagine going back or raising girls.
That's true. Well, listen, we've now gone for about 30 minutes, so that's the limit of our podcast. And so we'll wrap it up at that. Thank you, Jamie, for letting the listeners learn more details personally about you.
Richard, thank you for the great, great idea. And I'm going to have you back on, and I'm going to flip them back on you, and we're going to talk some more about you.
Okay.
All right, Richard.
See you later.
You take care of yourself.
Yep.
All right, bye-bye.
That's it, guys. It seems odd to ask what you think of me, so I won't. But I will speak to what Richard and I spoke about right after the interview was over. He mentioned that he's noticed that I don't show any bias toward anyone of a different race. I replied that in a perfect world, cops should be the most non-prejudiced people in the world. Why? Because cops see good and bad in all people, regardless of race, sex, religion, etc. I know that evil exists, and I know that good exists, and it doesn't matter the physical body in which it resides. My goal with this podcast, and with life, is to showcase the positive in this world and ignore the negative. And I'll do it for as long as I can. I'd like to thank Richard for coming on and interviewing me, and I'm definitely going to have him back on to talk more about him. So until next time, take care of one another, and thanks for listening.